Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Kevin Turner, and this is the Autosport Podcast. Well, we've just had the second round of the World Endurance Championship for 2024. Imola. After qualifying, it looked like it was going to be a home fan's dream with Ferrari 1-2-3 on the grid, which they somehow turned into a 4-7-8. And the race was in fact won by the Toyota of Mike Conway, Kamui Kobayashi and Nyck de Vries. And joining me to explain how this happened, how Ferrari got it so wrong or did Toyota get it so right, is Gary Watkins, who has only just returned from Italy. So welcome, Gary. I hope the flight delays weren't too traumatic.
No, they were traumatic, but it was a traumatic race, I think, especially for Ferrari. Yeah, you said, you know, talking about Toyota, for me, Toyota didn't win it. Ferrari lost it. Maybe not, they didn't lose it, they threw it away. It's as simple as that.
So how did that happen then? Basically, it all turned on the weather, really, didn't it? And decisions made as a result of that changeable weather. So where did Ferrari get it so wrong? Because it's not like they blew it all at the start, was it? It was quite a long way into the race before it all unraveled.
Yeah, this was all happening sort of just on the cusp of the four-hour mark. It's a six-hour race at Imola after the 10 hours or 1,812 kilometres at Qatar. We're back to the normal, regular six-hour races. And they pretty much dominated, although it is important to say that at the time this whole scenario started to unfold, Ferrari wasn't actually leading. Partly that was because James Calado had pitted during under green flag conditions, where the rest of the field pitted it under an FCY. And then Nyck de Vries in the winning Toyota that he shared with Kamui Kobayashi and Mike Conway did a absolutely phenomenal opportunistic move on Miguel Molina in the Ferrari that was leading when the race went green after an FCY. But anyway, Ferrari had the quickest car. They were going to win this race. I thought they were going to win this race. I'm sure they thought they were going to win the race, and the 70-odd thousand fans there, well, it probably wasn't that many because that was the three-day figure put out, thought they were going to win. But then it was just sort of starting to spit with rain. Then there was a safety car, which was precipitated by Callum Ilott going off in one of the Jota Porsche LMDHs. The rain intensified. For me, I was thinking, this is on the cusp. Down at Rivazza, it was wet, and the cars in the hypercar class were tiptoeing through there. Where I was on the main straight, it was sort of pretty much dry. Over at Tamburello, it was bone dry. So there was sort of this bizarre mixed condition across the track. Well, everyone, bar Ferrari, and I'm talking hypercar here, decided to pit. Ferrari left its cars out for four laps. And by the end of those four laps, Kobayashi in the Toyota was going 10, 11, 12 seconds a lap quicker. You know, so that was a massive time loss. Clearly, they realized they'd made the wrong decision. They brought their cars in. And when I say cars, that's the two factory cars plus the sort of customer satellite AF Corsa car, the yellow one, not the two red ones. They all came in at once. And I think after that, the leading Ferrari was a minute and a half down. Game over. So they got it wrong. Clearly, they got it wrong. But after the race, they actually admitted that they got it wrong twice over, which I think was quite big of them. And, you know, they couldn't hide from the fact that they got it wrong, that they made a mistake. And they basically said, first off, they misinterpreted their weather forecast. And I would say they must have misinterpreted the information from their eyes as they looked up into the sky as well. So they basically just didn't get a handle on the weather. They said they were expecting the rain earlier and that it should have come, and it didn't. And they actually said, well, we weren't really believing our forecast, which is fair, because you've got to rely to an extent on what your drivers are saying. And the drivers are saying, we can handle this, we can handle this. Well, obviously it got to a point where they couldn't handle it. Everyone was much quicker, so in they came. The second mistake was that they were actually going to split strategies at that sort of crucial moment, lap 135 to be precise, when the majority of the field, including the winning Toyota, both Toyotas and the second place Porsche, came in. Ferrari said that it was their plan to split their strategy, which means, you know, playing the percentages, bringing one car in to change to wets, leaving one car out to run on slicks. But for some reason, there was a breakdown in the chain of communication. That was actually the term that they used. And all three cars came in. So, sorry, all three cars stayed out. And so they got that. They sort of compounded their error, if you like, by having a plan and not sticking to it.
I mean, that's the most remarkable thing to me, I think, is that they didn't split straight. Like, poor old Cadillac, they've only got the one car, the Ganassi Cadillac. They have to just make the call with that one car. If you've got three out there, because let's face it, the third car is part of the family, isn't it? Even though it's yellow.
Absolutely.
Yeah, surely you would do at least two different things with it. That's the most remarkable thing for me, I think.
The only thing I can say in their defense, and Toyota only have two cars, of course, but Toyota didn't split their strategies. They brought both cars in straight away, whereas Porsche did go for the split strategy. So the car that finished second, the Kevin Estre, Andre Lotterer, Lawrence Vanthoor car, came in. The other car, Matt Campbell, Michael Christensen and Fred McAvecky, stayed out, actually, I think, for three laps. So that definitely compromised their race. But even that one lap difference between Campbell coming in and the Ferraris coming in, he still recovered to finish third, you know, a competitive third. Whereas the best place for Ferrari, the Fuoco Molina Nielsen car, only finished fourth. So that one lap, I think it was, might have been two, but anyway, that just shows you how slow it was, you know, if you were trundling around on your slick tires. Now I'm going to throw one other point that Ferrari made into the discussion. They, you know, Ferrari was mega for nearly 4 hours, and of course through qualifying and earlier in free practice. And not only were they quick, but they had good tire wear. They really handled the degradation very well, which isn't normally the case for Ferrari. Normally you would say, well, Toyota has the upper hand in that department. But Ferrari was triple stinting its tires through that dry period. And that was part of their strategy, because they believed the rain was going to come earlier. So they wanted to ensure that their car was on hot tires, you know, properly warm tires when the rain came. Well, you know, don't forget last year's controversy about the ban on tire warmers, then the tire warmers briefly coming back just for one race at Le Mans, then going again 100% for this year. So that was part of their strategy of triple stinting in an expectation of the rain coming a little bit earlier and making sure that they had, you know, nice hot and sticky tires to get through that rain.
So how do we get to this point where the opening round at Qatar, Porsche was quickest, you then go to it, and to be fair, you did say after that go, you said that you thought that would be an outlier. So now we've gone to him and a Ferrari are quickest. Toyota could match Porsche at the end there. They were pretty evenly matched on pace. So how much of that is track characteristics, how much of it is the cars being developed, and how much of it is the dreaded balance of performance that the teams can't talk about, but we can?
Yeah, I can't put a percentage on that, but
that would be amazing.
all three things are important. Clearly, the BOP didn't have the desired effect. If I say it's wrong, I'll probably have the ACO on the phone this afternoon. But it didn't level the playing field, particularly Toyota, that was the heaviest car. It was heavier than it's ever been. It was up at 1089 kilos, and that really took its toll around a circuit like Qatar with a lot of medium to fast corners. I think sometimes cars, as the weight is piled on, the effect is not linear. It gets to some kind of tipping point. I suppose it's a bit like in Formula One, isn't it, with tyre wear, people saying the car falls off or the performance falls off a cliff. And I think that was definitely the case with Toyota, and to a slightly lesser extent with Ferrari, which was another heavy car in Qatar. And I'm now going to tell you how heavy the Ferrari was in Qatar. So yeah, that was 1075 compared with 1089 for the Toyota. So they were really struggling with the weight of the car on that circuit configuration, but also as a result of the surface. I think the surface, which is a very fine, smooth surface, had an effect on that. So yes, the BOP was slightly out of kilter. I think there's been, you know, people are working on their cars, getting an understanding of them all the time. You know, we're seeing gains. You know, I'm just going to fast forward to BMW, who I'm sure we'll be talking about later. You know, race two for them in the WEC, obviously that car, the M Hybrid V8, has raced in IMSA, but racing in WEC for the first time, and they made a big step forward. And now we come to the circuit configuration. You know, Qatar and Imola, two totally different circuits in their layout. You think of all those chicanes at Imola, where you have to lump it over the curbs. You know, that is key to getting some lap time out of the car. So, you know, it's just a totally different set of circumstances. And I'm actually going to say that Imola, to me, might be their local track, and there might be something in the air that I don't know about, or there might be the extra motivation from the Tifosi there. But it wasn't going into it. I wasn't thinking this is Ferrari territory. If you think about where did the Ferrari work best last year, Le Mans, Imola. Well, again, they're two totally different circuits, aren't they? So full marks to Ferrari for actually nailing it there in dry conditions at Imola. And then if we look at the Porsche, well, the Porsche worked really well at Qatar, a smooth track. And we know that the Porsche doesn't like being picked up that little bit. You know, it's probably a combination of loss of aero as they pick up the ride height and a bit of damping. It wasn't going to be their best circuit. In fact, Kevin Estra told me, he goes, well, we were actually thinking this was going to be our worst circuit of the year. So Porsche, you know, to come within a cusp of victory was actually, I think, well, they were happy with that, and I think they would have signed for that before the race. And it, yeah, it did surprise me. So I think one thing that we can say coming out of Imola is that Porsche are banging the mix this year for victories every time out. So if they can win on one extreme of a circuit and nearly win on another extreme of the circuit, sort of two ends of the spectrum, then I think that bodes very well for their championship campaign.
Which, of course, they're topping the table, aren't they, with that first and second group, well, with exactly, that crew as well. Yes. So it's a very good start. I mean, from a slightly further afield perspective, the two things that jumped out to me, I mean, you mentioned just then BMW seemed much more, much more competitive. Nice to see more cars up there, because obviously when you've got... Yeah, you've got so many Porsches, three Ferraris, and the Toyotas you always expect up there. It's nice if someone else can get in there. So BMW seemed to step forward. But then the Jota guys, the privateers that we bigged up quite a bit at the end of last year and then coming into this year, they seem to have a bit of a nightmare. So why did those two teams seem to swap in there where they were running?
Yeah, Jota just didn't nail it last weekend at Imola. And I'm not sure they... entirely sure know why. They were saying, well, yeah, this isn't going to be a good circuit for us. And it was interesting, something that Porsche said, the factory team, that when they came and tested for 2 days at Imola, which was only just after Qatar, actually, just a week after the first race, the factory really struggled, as did Jota at that test. They're thinking, oh, yeah, how do we make this car work at this circuit? Well, the factory went away and made their car work, didn't they? You know, Jota, less so. You know, Jota could easily have had two cars in the points on another day. Jenson Button in the car that was sort of highest place, he lost his windscreen wiper. When I say lost, I mean it wasn't working. So we're through the rain, and then that damp section afterwards, you know, people are on slicks, but there's still water in the air, and you know, it not having a windscreen wiper is not exactly good. The other car had a couple of offs, and the team hinted at a technical problem that it wouldn't elaborate on. So it actually wasn't as bad as it looked for Jota, and I think, you know, they might have been up there, could have had a car in the top six, definitely, the way things panned out at the end. So, yeah, Jota weren't a match for Porsche. Sorry, weren't a match with their privateer Porsche for the factory Penske cars, but they weren't. They didn't really have the luck. You know, you would probably have to say that a failed windscreen wiper is bad luck. You know.
Yeah, Jensen's good in the wet, but he does need to be able to see where he's where he's going. Yeah. So yeah, just for the listeners, the Jota cars ended up 11th and 13th. But did get into the top six, of course, was the lead BMW another 20 car, Sheldon van der Linde, Robin Vrins, and René Rast. It's a pretty good driver lineup, isn't it? Some really good driver lineups in wet this year. And they came home sixth, just a lap off the winners. So are they encouraged by that? BMW pleased with the progress they've made?
It was definitely a happy camp there at BMW. They, I feel, you know, to say that they've, you know, turned a corner, it might be too early to say that. You know, again, just going back to circuit characteristics, totally different circuit. But the car looked good in qualifying as well. It was good in the race. It had a period when it was a bit higher. You know, the car, you know, dropped. Was actually a lap down at the end, but shouldn't have been a lap down. And, you know, and it might have been sort of up there with the Toyota ahead of it, the number eight car, and the recovering 50 Ferrari. But Sheldon van der Linde had a bit of a moment in the pit lane for his final stop, where he actually locked up. The car got a bit skew, you know, was a bit skew-whiff in the pits. It had to be manoeuvred into place, lost more than 20 seconds, and then to compound it, while all that was happening, there was an irregularity with the pit stop, and he got a drive through. So that explains why he was a lap down. He would have he might well have been in a fight for fifth, because particularly because Hartley, who actually lost fourth to Fuoco on the final lap, was really struggling with his energy levels. He'd been, I think he was probably the first person in hypercar to go on to slicks after the wet portion of the race. And so he had to go into some fairly drastic fuel save to make the finish without a splash. That, as we should say, so did Kamui Kobayashi, who stopped a lap later, but was also, you know, to keep the pace and save the fuel to avoid the splash. I think he did a remarkable job there.
There were two outstanding performances like that at the weekend. Scott Dixon did something similar to in the Long Beach IndyCar race. So there we are. Kobayashi and Dixon, the stars of fuel saving last weekend. I mean, they're such a good field. I mean, I was watching some of the highlights and it's so fantastic to see, you know, number of teens hypercars, you know, flying down towards the first corner together. It's fantastic. But so we could talk all day about them, but I guess the one car we definitely should talk about is the new Peugeot, the 9X8 2024. Which it looks quite similar. Actually, it's quite extensively different, isn't it, to make the most of the new wheel sizes that they've gone for. How did they go? I mean, they ended up ninth with their best car. So not disaster, but not as good as they almost getting on the podium the first round with the old car. So how were Peugeot feeling after that one?
Well, I think they sort of thought, our points, not too bad. You know, probably on pace, because it was a sort of mixed up race, they probably slightly overachieved in finishing position. They weren't in the mix as they were at Qatar, where they had, after the Porsche, they were the second fastest car. That certainly wasn't the case here. You know, they were... You know, I think afterwards they said, yeah, sort of 11th or 12th is probably where we would have ended up in a dry race. Now, this is not a new car. It's got the same monocoque. It's got the same engine gearbox, the running gear. So really, it's a significant revision in concept, because they've now gone from the same size tires all around to the wider rears and the narrower front. So that's the same as everyone. And with that, the aero concept has changed, which is why it's got now has a rear wing. The car does look very similar, as you say, but actually sort of 90% of the bodywork is changed. They've kept the sort of family look, but you can't bolt on the panels from the old car onto this one. So I think it's sort of the windscreen, anything that is a monocoque surface that is also sort of, you know, bodywork and the air scoop. I think that's about all that's carried over, and some of the sort of internal braking cooling system. Right. I think, and some of the cooling concept is more or less the same. So yeah, it's not a new car, because it's got the same monocoque engine gearbox, but it is a new car in the scope of the BOP, because it's been re-homologated. Therefore, it's new in the eyes of the BOP. Well, the old car, which clearly needed some help because of its unusual concept and the way the rules evolved since the design of that car was started, needed a lot of help under the BOP. So at Qatar, it was running down at the minimum weight and up at the highest possible power output. This car was sort of a lot heavier, 31 kilos heavier than the previous car had been at Qatar, and had 10 kilowatts less power. So the BOP was substantially different. Although you can't really say that because it's a new car, so you can't really compare the BOPs. But anyway, it was interesting that Peugeot Sport technical director Olivier Jansony admitted surprise at the BOP, a rare comment about the BOP, because, as you said, manufacturers, teams and drivers are not allowed to talk about the BOP. They get their wrists slapped. And in theory, could be sanctioned by the stewards, although that hasn't happened yet. And he said, I think we're going to be in, it's a tough BOP. And, you know, he was saying, well, we're going to be in for a tough weekend. And I think with the BOP they had, they reckon they got the most out of it on that 93 car driven by Nico Mollet, Jean-Éric Vergne and Mikkel Jensen. They sort of got the strategy right. They didn't make any mistakes in the pits. It lost 30 seconds early in the race when they with a gearbox glitch. But apart from that, it had a sort of a clean run. So I think it overachieved with the package as its package and BOP as it stood. At Imola, you know, clearly if they're coming home ninth every race, they're going to be disappointed with that, aren't they? But I'm fully expecting that when we get to Spa, that car in particular is going to be a bit of a mover in the BOP table.
Well, actually, I was going to leave that till the end, but as you've mentioned it, Spa, nice fast track. I think Ferrari actually was one of their, not as good as Le Mans, but it was one of their better kind of turnouts last year, wasn't it? What are your expectation of the relative order at Spa?
Well, yeah. Obviously, the BOP is going to play a role, and I'm going to stick my neck out and say that I don't think the BOP has done its job so far. You know, it's a new system. It's sort of been explained to us, but not very well. So the values are changing race by race, whereas that sort of wasn't the case at the beginning of last year, but was at the end. So I think there needs to be some work done on the BOP, but you know, a BOP is only as good as the data that is fed into it. And now as the season is getting going, obviously the ACO and the FIA have more and more data to sort of numbers to pour into the top of the computer, and then, you know, pull the handle and the ticket comes out with a BOP. So because they say it's entirely empirical and not there's no personal inputs there. When I put it to Jansny that the rule makers were being cautious with a new car, and he said, "Oh no, we can't say that. I'm surprised because I'm basing that on the data that we have, and of course I don't have the data from the other cars." I suspect he was sort of backpedaling a bit when he said that, and I actually got picked up by the FIA for even asking that question. You know, they're saying it's based on data, blah blah blah.
How dare you do your job, Gary? This is outrage.
I think it was a legitimate question. You know, were they being cautious? And you know, clearly there's going to be less. There was no race data about the revised Peugeot coming into this race. So the Peugeot BOP is going to be tweaked and fiddled with, isn't it? Potentially more than other cars, because the rulemakers will be understanding what it can do better now. They've got a race worth of data.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I'm, as you know, I'm not a huge fan of balance points. So I understand that it's been key to making this sort of golden era come about. But even if you've got the BOP absolutely perfect, there are teams that are new to their cars, that haven't got going to not get the most out of them in the way that you would expect Toyota to, for example, because they've been doing it since the start of the rules. And of course, you can have track characteristics. We've seen that in GT3 racing, haven't we, where the BOP settled down, but you still get quite wild variations from circuit to circuit, which I guess, go on.
But the ACO say their circuit takes into account, sorry, the ACO and the FIA must get it right, say it takes into the account the track characteristics.
Yeah, I think that's setting themselves a very hard target, that is, isn't it?
Of course, but, you know, and it is. Let's not pretend that it's an easy job, you know, that they've got. And you're absolutely right. As you get a better handle, as each team gets a better handle on their car, and especially a new Peugeot with what is effectively a new car, even though it's got the same type of engine, gearbox, blah blah blah, it is effectively a new car in the way it works on track. Different aero, different tires. So from that point of view, it's new. You know, they are going to take time to maximize it. And the testing they've done, you know, I think they've done four big tests, have all been aimed at Le Mans, their endurance simulations. So they have got sort of some digging into the sort of setup and just, you know, honing the car for each race weekend. I think there is work to do there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's true. Going to be true of some of the other cars like the Lamborghini and the Alpine as well that are still also fairly new, aren't they? So, yeah, well, let's look at the category that's probably, I'd say, the most successful category, balance of performance category, certainly this century, really. So,
well,
LMGT3.
It's based on LMGT3, that it's the founding principle. Sorry, GT3, yeah. Which obviously started more than nearly 20 years ago. The founding principle of GT3 is BOP. And now, obviously, for this year, it's been adopted by the ACO and the FIA for WEC. Yeah. But funnily enough, I'm going to say again that I don't think the BOP, you know, they haven't hit the sweet spot yet. You know, we're seeing certain cars in the mix and other cars not in the mix. And let's not forget, it's so complicated in a pro-am category because, you know, you've got the differentials between the drivers. You know, you should be able to get, you know, 55 pro drivers, bolt them in a car, and they're within a tenth. You know, silvers, you get 50 silvers and put them in the car, and they're within 3/10. Obviously, with the bronze driver, you know, a true am, the gap can be seconds, you know, or a second, you know. So, yeah, it's, and of course, the BOP shouldn't take into account driver talent, or a driver's speed on the circuit. So it is different. For me to turn around and say, yeah, the BOP is not quite right in LMGT3 might be a bit of a sweeping generalization. And that, I know that phone call's coming now. but yeah, I still think that you know, it's early days for this category and sort of doing the BOP. So I'm sure it will get better with time.
Well, we had 18 cars in LMGT3 at Imola, and I think it's fair to say that the fastest car didn't win in the same way in hypercar because of the changeable conditions. But is it a coincidence that WRT, who are quite handy when it comes to racing at, say, Spa and the Nürburgring, where the weather is also changeable, have ended up with a 1-2 with their BMWs? So how did WRT manage to pull that one out of the hat when it was, you know, it didn't look like they were the quickest cars in qualifying in the class?
Well, they weren't the quickest cars, but they stayed out on slicks through the rain. So they had their pros in the car. So that was Augusto Farfus and Maxime Martin, which obviously helps. Now, the other thing that we should say, of course, is that a GT car normally, you know, is less compromised in the wet. It's it has more mechanical grip than a prototype sled, or let's say it's less reliant on aero grip. Ride height can be a factor. Probably wasn't so much of a factor this time because it wasn't like, you know, there weren't puddles around the track. But also the other thing, of course, is that GT3 cars, unlike their predecessors in GTE, have ABS brakes, which as we all know, is a bit of a help in wet conditions. So that was significant, and they kept out on track. Now, the car that should have won was the same car that won in Qatar, the Manti RX Sing. I'm not sure how you really pronounce that. Porsche 911. Well, just going back to my earlier point about how it's the AM, the bronze, who really makes a difference. Again, Alexander Malikin, who races under British license, he's actually a Belarusian. He was the standout bronze this time, and, you know, probably had set that car on course for a second victory. Problem was, with the way the pit stops panned out, and obviously there were lots of four-course yellows, and stopping under four-course yellows gives you a significant advantage. He finished his double stint at the start a few, you know, about a minute or even less short of his minimum drive time. So he had to get back in the car later on. and actually got back in the car for one lap because it was under yellow conditions. So he got in, did a lap, came in, and was pulled out of the car. So strategically, WRT got it bang on, as we know they always do. Well, generally do. You know, we've seen it at Spa, as you say. You know, some pretty impressive tyre calls, sending Laurens Vanthoor out once in the Spa 24 hours on wet tyres when the track was bone dry, but they knew the rain was coming, and he basically had to nurse the tyres for it was Dries Vanthoor, not Laurens Vanthoor, had to nurse the tyres just for a full lap, and it didn't actually win them the race, but it was an inspired call.
Probably should mention that Valentino Rossi, of course, got his first WEC podium, didn't he, in the second car with Martin and Ahmed Al-Harty as well. So, but it looks to me, after two races, that Manti Porsche lineup, perhaps because of Malakin being the sort of new Ben Keating, I think you called him after
the car, yeah,
is probably the championship favourite, isn't it, given that strength that they've got with their bronze?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would say that, you know, he's the standout bronze. And just going back to what I said earlier, it's the bronze who makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, just before we tie it all up, I just want to ask you, Gary. I mean, the 73,000 across the weekend at Imola. Are you feeling on the ground that the World Endurance Championship has got a bigger following now? Is it gathering momentum? I mean, we obviously always see huge crowds at Le Mans, but what about the other rounds? Do you think it's picking up?
Well, I can tell you, if it came to Silverstone, I would confidently predict a big crowd. Big sadness.
Amen to that. Yes.
Get wet to Silverstone. Sadness for me is that Silverstone has dropped off the WEC calendar. And, you know, to my mind, we should have a WEC race in the UK. It can't go to Brands Hatch, unfortunately, so it's got to go to Silverstone. So, I would confidently predict a big crowd. I think we saw a good crowd at Spa last year. And I'm sure we'll see another good crowd this year. Problem is, when we go to Qatar and Bahrain, we don't see good crowds. And perhaps actually an interesting point will be to see the crowd we get at Austin when we go to COTA, because COTA was part of the WEC schedule, not in the first year of the rebirth of the series, because it's easy to forget that the WEC, the new WEC, kicked off at Sebring back in 2012. Then it had a prolonged time at Austin, where it was a double header initially with IMSA, and they tried having two races on one day. They tried having one race on the IMSA race on one day, the WEC race on another. Never got a crowd through the door, which I was really disappointed with, you know, because obviously America, you know, has a deep passion for racing, doesn't it? Probably it's the wrong part of America. I would say Texas. It's not California. You know, I think we should go to Laguna Seca personally, and I'm sure it would be packed to the gunnels.
Yeah, absolutely. But the calendar is perhaps not the dream calendar that we would come up with, is it, Gary? But it's I think the championship is certainly in a much healthier place now than it was, say, 3 or 4 years ago when it was
absolutely
in that rebuilding phase. And for those of you wanting to see what the next few rounds actually are, so we're at Spa on the 11th of May. For what I guess has almost become a traditional Le Mans warm-up race, hasn't it? It's quite often one of the teams rocks up with some slightly different setup with one of the cars.
Of course, they can't do anymore,
which is a shame.
Formula, you know,
I always liked that. I always liked it when Audi would rock up with some more Peugeot or whatever.
Some people would run the low downforce, of course. They're sort of, you know, people you might say long tail, but not long tail because they're always the same length. But, you know, their low downforce bodywork. And, you know, 1 year, I think, in 2017, Toyota ran one car in Le Mans trim and the others in high downforce trim. And if you think about the sectors, you know, you've got sectors 1 and 3 where probably Le Mans levels of aero work, but then you've got, you know, sector 2 with the double left at Pujon, you know, a real flat out high, you know, pace where aerodynamic grip is key. So it sort of balanced itself out, and it wasn't actually an easy decision to make on which was the fastest. But yeah, I miss that kind of thing. But of course now, you know, only one aero spec is allowed, only one movable aerodynamic, when I say movable, adjustable, I mean aerodynamic device is allowed. So, you know, sometimes it's the rear wing, sometimes it's the flap underneath the front of the car. The manufacturer makes that call.
Yeah, so no, sadly, no long tails at Spa, but I still think it should be mega. But so that's the 11th of May, and then of course Le Mans 24 Hours on the 15th and 16th of June, which is obviously the big one. But and of course Gary will be there for us, and of course at Le Mans we'll have our usual big team there. But for now, thank you very much, Gary Watkins. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back soon with another Autosport podcast.
Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.